You know me, it's that most wonderful time of the year slash day, week, month, where we get to talk to Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. So, Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch, on Robin Hood Radio, what do you have to say to your adoring...
I have a lot on my mind this morning. I'm full of... I tell you, the one thing I spent too much time on was searching for a recipe that a listener asked me about. And in the process, I discovered the recipe is online. However, I'm on the internet. It's called Chicken Savoy, and it is a hyper-local dish of northern New Jersey, actually from a specific place called the Belmont Tavern. But the Belmont Tavern has many offshoots, you know, employees who left and opened their own places and decided to serve this chicken, which is sometimes called Stretch's chicken, because it was a chef slash cook, really cook, at the Belmont Tavern, Italian-American restaurant, that created this dish, which is still extremely, extremely popular in the neighborhood. Not many people have heard about it, including Arthur Schwartz, when he first went on the radio 30-whatever years ago, and on WOR, which was a very strong signal in northern New Jersey. Basically, New Jersey thought WOR was a New Jersey station.
Right.
But it really wasn't. Anyway, so one of the first questions I got when I got on the radio was, do you know how to make chicken Savoy? So I found out, you know, it's from Belmont Tavern, and if I recall, Stretch was not cooking anymore, if he was even alive anymore, but his son was cooking nearby, and it was the son who showed me how to make the recipe. Now, the whole deal, there are two essential parts here that are very hard to reproduce at home. One is the chicken used to be, maybe still is, cooked in a 700-degree oven. That is a commercial oven, like the oven they would use for a pizza.
Wow.
My oven only goes up to 500 degrees, and even that's a struggle for it. There are ovens out there, I believe, who go to 550. So you have to pump up the oven to the absolute max. The other essential, and I read a whole bunch of recipes that are on the internet. None of them mention this, and I think this is the real secret to the recipe. It is finished off. You deglaze this burning hot pan that has a lot of chicken fat and little burnt pieces of whatever, I'll tell you in a second, with red wine vinegar. Now, none of the recipes say it should be 7% red wine vinegar, and I remember that was sort of the essential thing. Most vinegar is 5 or 6%. That you buy in anywhere, not just in the supermarket. But there is 7% around. I can buy it. And I recall even I had a listener at the time who made vinegar. And she and her vinegar was 7%, maybe a little more. And she brought me some so I could make chicken Savoy. But you can buy 7% vinegar. So what the dish is, you make a paste of a pecorino, grated sheep's milk cheese, with oregano and garlic, a lot of chopped garlic. And you rub this into pieces of chicken and cut up chicken. Stick it in this incredibly hot oven for about a half an hour, I think it takes to cook the chicken pieces. Maybe not even. I recall the pans that they cooked this chicken Savoy in were black. I mean, they had been so abused in their lifetime, they turned from aluminum pans, they turned to black. So I actually have a baking sheet that's black that used to be aluminum. But anyway, I wouldn't use it for this. In any case, and then you take it out of the oven, you immediately splash on this 7% red wine vinegar. Most of it sizzles and evaporates, but it does create a little bit of a, you could say, sauce. And that's it. That's the whole dish. That's chicken Savoy. As I said, there are many recipes online, And a couple of them, I read the comments, and they said, "Oh, well, there was too much liquid." There's no liquid in this sauce, in this dish, except for the red wine vinegar, that, as I said, mostly evaporates. It forms not much more than a glaze. This is not a chicken dish that I decided to continue to make at home, even though I made it a few times. I gotta say, cooking pecorino cheese on top of a chicken for a half an hour at 400 degree at 500 degrees doesn't do any good to the pecorino. So that's not my kind of thing. So this is all from the mail.
I mean, what did it do to the? I shouldn't ask, but I'm sensitive to smell.
It smells good.
Okay.
You know, I remember it smelling good. I remember liking it when I ate it, you know, at the restaurant. I remember liking it a couple times when I made it. But like I said, if I really loved it, I'd still be making it. So obviously I didn't love it. I mean, there are other chicken things I like better.
And
so,
what was Bob's so you made it?
Oh, but this is years ago, Jill. I haven't made it in 30 years, probably. Maybe more. I don't know. No. Yeah, I could have not been making it for 30 years. So, yeah, if you want to try it in its home place, you go to the Belmont Tavern in, is it Ridgefield, New Jersey? It's in northern New Jersey. You can look. I'm telling you, it's all over the Internet. So moving on with the mail, I had to laugh at this one. Erica, I'm not going to use her last name. I don't want her to be embarrassed, but a woman named Erica asked me how to make the gnocchi that she grew up with, that her grandmother made. And she had to point out they were very firm. I'm going to be polite here. They were firm gnocchi, not light and feathery the way people say they should be these days. Well, it's like asking me, how do you make a hard matzo ball? I don't know how. I grew up eating soft matzo balls. I make soft matzo balls. If anything, my matzo balls are sometimes a little too soft. And I always attribute that to using a little bit too much schmaltz in the mix. But a hard matzo ball, to me, is not appealing. And a hard gnocchi, I don't know. We never say only one, is not very appealing to me. So I that would not be a goal. And I want to add to that, that all these things, like matzo balls, gnocchi, almost any kind of dough, is very dependent on the maker having the right feel. And it takes some experience. So don't think you can make gnocchi to your loving the first time you make gnocchi. You need a little practice, and you need to probably adjust the recipe so that it works for you. Let's see here. Here's something. This was an easy one. Oh, by the way, I'm answering mail from M. Miles at Robin Hood Radio. So if you want to write to me at M. Miles, M-I-L-E-S, at Robin Hood Radio. Somebody asked me, I have a bottle of Verjus. That's spelled V-E-R-J-U-S, Verjus. And what do I do with it? Well, you use it. And how do you use it? Mainly as a salad. You know, the fancy French, if they're having a salad with something that doesn't really go with vinegar, they will maybe use Verjus instead because it's a milder acid. And it doesn't interfere with flavors from whatever it is you're concerned about. So I don't have much use for Verjus, although if somebody gave me a gift of a little bottle of Verjus, I would certainly make some salads with it. I use lemon juice, a few squeezes of lemon when I have a salad that I want to be gentle, meaning oil and lemon, salt and pepper. But mainly I use red wine vinegar, and I do splurge and buy very good red wine vinegar, meaning a red wine vinegar from good wine that has good flavor. Barolo, most of the red wine vinegar that tells you what wine it's from is going to be a good red wine vinegar. Otherwise, they don't bother to tell you. Now, somebody asked me to reminisce, which I think I do all the time. Don't I, Jill?
Yes.
I'm a big reminiscer. But sometimes when I reminisce and I mention a food, I've got to go make it, meaning I whet my own appetite. And that came up recently when somebody asked me to reminisce, and the first thing I thought about was kasha varnishkis. I love kasha varnishkis. It's very easy to make. Well, can be very easy to make. But I didn't have any kasha in the house, which I usually do, by the way, because kasha is a generic word, actually means cereal. But when we say kasha, we mean buckwheat, groats. Now, groats, the only way to describe groats is that they're bigger than grits. It's a cracked grain, in this case, buckwheat. And it comes in several different granulations. There's fine kasha. When you cook that up, it sticks together, and it's usually the kasha used, like if you get a kasha knish or anything stuffed with kasha, it's usually the fine kasha. Then there's medium, and I like medium for most things. And then there's coarse, and it says on the package, coarse granulation. And then there is whole as well. I hardly ever see whole around because I don't know. Well, if you go to a store that's frequented by Eastern Europeans, you will find whole. But anyway, in my regular supermarket, I was shocked to see they've, after my entire life, they have changed the packaging on Wolf's kasha, which is probably why I couldn't find it in the other supermarket I was looking. It used to come in this very distinctive brown box that had a cellophane window in the front, so you could actually see the granulation of the buckwheat. Nowadays, it's in a bag. I have one in front of me. It's just a resealable bag. So many things come in these resealable bags now. And it's still the same old kasha. I cooked it up. But you got to look for... And the bags are different colors depending on the granulation. I only have the coarse one in front of me, and that one is sort of a beigey, yellowy color. Anyway, kasha is the buckwheat groats. The varnishkis are noodles. And the word varnishkis is similar root, I read, to vareniki, which are little stuffed dumplings, little Russian stuffed dumplings. And varnishkis are bow ties, bow tie pasta. Now, I buy a kosher brand of egg pasta, bow ties. And it's hard, I think, these days to find egg pasta bow ties in the supermarket like Goodman's or Manischewitz. But any kind of bow tie is good, really. And I have to say, this is, you know, it could be an Italian pasta, farfalle, which means butterflies. It could be that. And in fact, I wanted to say, this is one of the few Jewish dishes that my Italian friends all understand. Well, they understand other ones as well, but they love this one because it's pasta, and it's pasta with the grain, which they get. So, but to me, I love the earthy flavor of the kasha itself, but what makes it worth eating is a lot of fried onions. So I start, whether I'm going to make this with broth or even a vegetarian style, I start by frying onions, and to make, I measured these bags of kasha that now come, is about 2 cups of kasha. So for 2 cups of kasha, I would use at least a pound of onions, 3 medium onions, 3 medium-largish onions. I like to chop them, I mean, not chop, but dice them, like quarter-inch dice. Put them in a pan. I use a cast iron skillet usually to sauté. Now, if you have, and I usually do, have chicken fat in the refrigerator because I skim my chicken broth and save the fat. But you can use vegetable oil. The important flavor here, really, are the onions. And if you do use soup fat, you're going to have to remember that it's got quite a bit of moisture in it. It takes a little longer to cook this down. So saute that over, starting them out at high heat and then lowering the heat a little bit. And it's going to take a good half hour to get these onions nice and brown. And that's sort of a flavor base for your kasha. So what I do is I scrape out the onions and whatever fat is in the pan into a little side dish. And now I would do my kasha in the same pan. Deglaze the pan, meaning put a cup of water into the pan and scrape out the flavor from the bottom of the pan and pour that into a cup and put that aside. Now, take your kasha, 2 cups of kasha, with 2 eggs, beat 2 eggs on the side, put them into the kasha, and toss the kasha with the beaten eggs. It's all going to get clumped together and damp. And now put that in your dried-out skillet and cook it over medium heat. One, you're going to start smelling the kasha, which has a wonderful aroma. And two, you'll see the stick-together kasha is now coming separate. As soon as it has a nice aroma and is all separate, you add your liquid. Now, what I use is what I use to deglaze the pan, that onion-flavored water, basically. And altogether, for 2 cups of kasha, you're going to need about 4 cups of liquid. So whatever onion liquid you have, and then 1 quart, 2 4-cups of beef broth or chicken broth, could be out of a box, could be out of a can. I don't usually use my homemade for this because, you know, it's one of many flavors, and my homemade should shine a little better. So and that's it. Turn the heat down to medium. Well, as soon as the whole mixture starts heaving, then you turn the heat down to low, cover the pan, and let it cook for 7 or 8 minutes, at which point the kasha is done, pretty much cooked. Go taste it. You may want to salt it a bit if you haven't already, if the broth didn't have enough salt. And it should be sort of fluffy, but a little bit grainy, chewy. And that's your kasha. Aside, boil up your egg noodle bow ties or your just plain old pasta bow ties. 6 to 8 ounces of pasta is enough for the amount of kasha you just made. Boil it until it's tender, until it's to your taste, tender. And now you toss together the onions, the kasha, and the noodles. By the way, if you can't find nice bow ties, you can use a broad noodle for this. It's not varnishkiss, but it's delicious. Anyway, that's it. Kasha varnish. Now, this I could eat just for its own sake. Usually we have this as a side dish. These days, I don't know who makes kasha varnishkiss, but it's in every delicatessen I see. Could be good, could not be good.
Exactly. I mean,
Hello?
No, I'm just thinking, as my mouth is watering, about how I would want something. There used to be, where I worked in Midtown, several good delicatessens, plus you could order from them. But it's just, it was never exactly even. It was just never, one place always had better whatever than the other.
Yeah, you know, that's life.
It's life.
That's why I eat at home. And when I want something like that, I make it myself. Unless I don't really run across kasha varnishkiss that I have to have these. By the way, well, I grew up eating kasha, so I love the flavor of kasha. We did not always have it with pasta, varnishkiss, and onions. We mostly had it as a side dish to pot roast. And the juices from the pot roast and the onions and maybe carrots as well from the pot roast would go on top of the kasha, you know, as a gravy.
Right.
And now I guess I have to make a pot roast. I did make, I think I mentioned, I did make corned beef for St. Patrick's Day. because, as I mentioned on the air, you can buy a good corned beef at this time of the year. But that's not the same. It is brisket, but it's not the same. Although, I had a laugh. Reminiscing, I remember one year when I got a call from a listener who said, well, I made the corned beef the way you told me, but it was too salty. Well, what she did was she cooked the corned beef the way I would cook a raw brisket on a bed of onions and carrots, and I guess she even maybe salt and peppered it before she put it in the oven. So, of course, it was going to be insanely salty at the end. You got to really, really cook the salt out of a corned beef. So, anyway.
So
write
to
me. I'm enjoying the mail. MMiles@Robinhood Radio. And I'm trying to answer you individually, but sometimes I can't because it's too long an answer. But if it's a short answer, I'll even answer you, you know, personally. Right?
That's great. I have one quick question. I've got two quick questions. We'll see how
quick
they are.
Well, make it quick because we
don't have a lot. I run us out of time. The first question. When you make a pot roast,
yes.
What do you do?
Well, you mean, were we talking about a brisket?
No, we're talking less about a brisket, more.
Oh, like a chuck roast?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. I would brown it on top of the stove, and then stick it in the oven with whatever.
Okay.
You know, carrots, onions, celery, whatever. Or I could cook it on top. I mean, then I keep it in a low oven, like a 275, no more than 300 degree oven. And several hours later, I've got a really nice piece of meat. If you want to do it on top of the stove, you can do that too. But then you got to watch the pot because you don't want it to boil. You just want it to bubble away very slowly. That's it. Now, by the way, a thick piece of meat makes for a better pot roast than a thin piece of meat. And I see in the supermarket these chuck roasts that are only an inch thick. That's not good for a pot roast. You need to have at least an inch and a half, 2 inch thick piece of meat to make a 2 inch piece of meat. Like 3 pounds of chuck roast should be your minimum. Is that good enough, Anthony?
That's good enough. And
don't ever forget your salt and pepper.
Yeah.
I mean, people do, and then they say, oh, why is it so bland? Well, how about salt and pepper?
And it's funny because if you grew up in a certain way at a certain time, that was a given. What's the first thing you do? You salt it, you pepper it.
You salt and pepper.
So that I totally understand.
That's, you know, in my old age, I eliminate things more than add things. So,
yeah, but,
and, you know, there are a lot of things like chicken. We eat a lot of just plain roasted chicken with nothing but salt and pepper.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, my dears.
All right,
you.
Well,
have a great
you.
Week.
As
it's,
always.
It's real spring
and,
here.
Have a good week yourself, and love to Bob, and thank you very much. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robinhood Radio.